Hello, I'm Gary Peck, your host on Memories and Music, presented Sunday at 1 p.m. by Inkle Metals Company. This week my guest will be Miss Burl Draper, a resident of Coppercliff since 1905. On our program, we will be talking about early days in Coppercliff. Join Miss Burl Draper and myself Sunday at 1 o'clock when Inkle Metals Company present Memories and Music on Stereo 92.7 CIGM-FM.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Memories and Music on CIGM-FM Stereo for this Sunday. I'll be back in a few moments with an introduction to our first musical selection. But before that, Gary Peck will introduce today's guest on the program.
Today on Memories and Music, our guest is Miss Burl Draper, a resident of Coppercliff for the past 75 years, and the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. C.S. Draper, who came to the Coppercliff area in the 1890s. In fact, the Draper family have lived continuously in this area since 1898, with Mr. C.S. Draper being one of the early jewelers in the area, and as is the case with many people in the Sudbury district, he worked for the Canadian Copper Company. In just a few minutes, we'll commence our interview with Ms. Draper, a well-known teacher in the community of Coppercliff. Ms. Draper will be sharing with us some reminiscences about early days in Coppercliff and some anecdotes in connection with her teaching career. However, first we'll turn the program over to Doug McLaughlin, our music host. Today on Memories and Music, our guest is Miss Burl Draper. And welcome to the program, Miss Draper.
Thank you.
Miss Draper, your father was a jeweler, and that's virtually all I was able to find out about your father through the local sources and in doing some research on the jewelry industry in the area. And I think that's what it initially brought us in contact. Was the research there. Could you tell us, share with us rather, your early memories, as your parents indicated they were, when they arrived in the area, for example. In the 1890s, I believe, they came to Sudbury.
Yes, in 1898, Dad arrived in Sudbury, and Saul Silverman got him a room in Coppercliff, and he was able to set up his bench and do a bit of watch repair and watch making, or clock repair. And
where was your father born?
Dad was born in the States. I don't know exactly where. They came over as United Empire Loyalists and settled in the county of Clarendon, Cuyo to be specific.
Mm-hmm. Now, did he ever indicate how he became attracted to the jewelry industry?
Yes, he left home when he was 16, and he apprenticed himself to a jeweler in Pembroke. And he did a bit of traveling after he finished his apprenticeship and finally landed in Parry Sound.
From Pembroke, a little bit of traveling, and then ultimately in Parry Sound.
Yes.
Did he have his own business in Parry Sound?
Yes, he bought Bradner out in Parry Sound.
Bradner?
Yes.
And was an independent operator. Your father's name, by the way, before we pursue this too far.
Charles Samuel.
Known as C.S. Draper?
Mm-hmm.
Known by his initials.
His name really was Christopher, but he didn't like it, so he had it changed.
He had it changed to
yes.
Charles.
Mm-hmm.
And your mother came to the area, I believe you indicated, a year after?
Yes.
After he arrived?
Yes.
That would be from Parry Sound as well?
No, she came from Webwood down after my sister was born.
Came from Webwood?
Yes.
Do you recall your father practicing the jewelry business at all?
Just fixing watches around the house. I can remember him fixing a ring that had been broken. He took a $5 gold piece and mended it.
Mm-hmm.
But that is about all I can remember.
But he did have a business in Coppercliff. And where was it located?
Well, first of all, down on Balsam Street, across from the school. The dairy is there now.
Right.
And it was next door to the church.
Which church would that be?
It would be, they were using the one building,
interdenominational.
I believe. It'd be interdenominational, yes.
Did he also work out of the house?
Yes, after they moved here. This was a store at one time, and he had his bench set up in here, and he did repair clocks and watches.
This house being 18
Poplar
Collins
Street, yes.
Earlier, formerly known as 18 Poplar Street.
Right.
So he did operate out of here.
Yes.
They moved, your parents
just very
moved,
short time,
just very
though.
Short time. Mm. Parents moved to this house, was it in the 1890s?
Yes, it would be about 1899 that they moved here. And sometime during 1899, they bought the place mm-hmm. for
$300. $300.
Can you imagine buying a place today for $300?
I think we're all looking for that place.
I think so.
What prompted them to come to Sudbury?
Work.
Work?
Yes. Dad had to get outside to do work instead of being cooped up inside.
For medical reasons.
For medical reasons, yes. And he got a job with Canadian Copper Company. And it was pick and shovel at that time.
And that's very different work as compared to the work of a jeweler.
Oh, yes. And the shifts are very different from the shifts today. It wasn't an 8-hour shift. It was a 12, sometimes 24, sometimes 24, 48 hours.
Is that right? Did he ever talk about his work?
Oh, yes. We knew just exactly what he was doing.
What kind of work was he doing? You indicated pick and shovel, but what would he share with you as a youngster?
Well, he would tell us how he did it, and he would show us the blisters on his hands.
So you had a fairly good idea that...
Yes, that it was very, very hard, heavy work. And finally, he took a Scranton school course, and first of all, he was working with the stationary boilers, and then laterally on an engine. He was an engineer.
Did he work for the... When did he begin work, I should say, with the Canadian Copper Company?
In 1898.
In 1898.
I believe he got a job the day he arrived.
With the Canadian Copper Company.
Yes.
But he still operated as a jeweler.
Mm-hmm. I don't think he operated as a jeweler.
No. You think he was operating out of his house? Like,
yes.
Not as
just
an independent.
As someone who could fix watches and clocks. And
but you do remember him working fairly early anyhow in your life.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't imagine working with a pick and shovel helped him, the jeweler, in terms of
no, the because
the
hands
work.
Would be very hard and rough. And the insides of a clock or a watch are very fine.
He repaired watches and clocks.
Mm-hmm.
You can recall
and
people
the sewing
them.
Machine.
Repaired those as well.
Yes, not those,
but
ours.
Yours,
yes.
I should say. And did he make rings? Would he fabricate
at one
jewelry?
Time he did. But you see, he wouldn't have the time after he started working.
No.
With Canadian Copper Company.
Just know that would almost be you'd require leisure time.
Yes,
and there just wasn't leisure time
no.
then.
No.
Miss Draper, your family, I assume you had other sisters?
I had one sister.
One sister.
And she died in 1923 at the age of 23.
At the age of 23. Did you have any brothers?
Yes, I had two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I had brother Gordon, who lived till he was 75, and a brother Harold, who lived until he was 81.
And your sister's name?
Gladys.
Gladys. And mm-hmm. you were born in 1905?
Yes.
March, mm-hmm. was it March? No, November. The 26th. Mm-hmm. And you've lived in Copper Cliff all your life.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think what we'll do is we'll turn the program back to our music host. When we return, perhaps you could tell us what it was like to grow up as a youngster in this community.
I'll try.
Okay. First, we'll turn the program over to Doug McLaughlin. Burl Draper is our guest today on Memories and Music. And Miss Draper, you taught school in Copper Cliff, I think you indicated, for a number of years. Throughout your life, I believe.
Well, not altogether throughout my life.
But a large part of it, anyhow.
3 years up in the township of Norman.
Okay.
And then the rest of the time here,
in
from 32.
So you've seen a number of changes over the years, having been born in 1905 and taught for a number of years. What was it like as a youngster to grow up in Copper Cliff?
Well, we had fun in Copper Cliff. We didn't have people planning our time for us. We didn't have people telling us where to go or what to do. We had to organize our own games. And usually in the early evening, we played out on the street here. We played 10-cheap run, tag, hide-and-go-seek. And in the winter time, we bobsledded down the hills here, which was very nice, and our backyard, the drainage from the sink went out the back, on the backyard, and it was a mass of ice, and we used to slide down it in old boilers and tubs and on cardboard or whatever was available.
So in those days, you really didn't have the organized sports that we've been accustomed to.
Oh, no.
And you had to take the initiative in terms of what you were going to be playing.
And I think it's better all around because a youngster doesn't...
Was
it
better?
It was better, yes. Because a youngster today will ask you what to do. We didn't ask anyone what to do. We went out on the street, and the time we had to play, mm-hmm. we made good time of it.
Right. Now, people have suggested, when we talk about the Victorian era, and certainly 1905 is not the Victorian era, in the true sense of the word, missed by a couple of years, it's been suggested parents were quite strict. Would that be your observation?
Yes, parents were. My parents were very puritanical. You were not allowed out at night. Your dishes were washed usually by 6 o'clock. You would be allowed out for maybe an hour, but you had to be in. But you could bring your friends into your home.
Mm-hmm.
And mother and dad always made children and... Well, the older boys and girls brought their friends in, and they always made them welcome.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I can remember, especially in the wintertime, Mother and Dad would buy apples by the barrel, and the snow apples were always put down closest to the ladder going down into the cellar. And we always had a huge bowl of snow apples that you could munch on while you were playing cards or checkers.
Another popular pastime.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you were living in Sudbury, in Coppercliff, I should say, during that period of time, there would be no theater?
Oh, yes, there was. There was a Rex Theater.
The Rex Theater.
Yeah. It was down
was the
on
first theater, and that was located on...
On Market Street.
On Market.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have an opportunity to go there that often?
Not very often, no.
Fairly expensive.
Well, it would be expensive in those days,
right.
Because your father was not making the money that they are making today. His hourly rate at the beginning was 10 cents an hour.
In 1898.
10 cents an hour, yeah. And it was a 12-hour shift. And some days it was 24, sometimes 48-hour shift.
So you had a number of places where you'd put that money.
Oh, good many.
When we were off the air, you were sharing with me the story about I think it was your mother being tied up in the smog and how
she
was able to get home.
We had a phonograph that had a very large horn, and my brother Harold had put the horn out the window, and the sulfur smoke was very, very dense. You talk about pollution today. We haven't got pollution. Our air is good compared to what our air was back then. And you couldn't see your hand in front of you. And Mother lost her way, and it was through the sound of the phonograph coming out the window.
You can recall those occasions when you could not see your hand in front of you.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Only during the summer, would they be?
No, all year.
Would it be continuous, or
well, you
just
see,
would
the
depend
beds,
on the wind and
no,
the operation?
No, the beds were over where the public school
yes,
is today and over
is.
In the park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you get beds that are roasting for 2 or 3 months on end. There's bound to be smoke. There's bound to be smoke all the time.
So you had continuous smoke while the roast beds were operating?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever feel it affected you, at that time, or it was something to which you were accustomed, I suppose?
I don't think it affected me. Dad lived until he was 87,
mm-hmm.
and when he started work here, he was told he had 6 months to live. That was a long 6 months.
That certainly was. I think everyone would like that,
mm-hmm.
that type of 6 months. By the question, my intent was, would people at that time comment on the smog or the pollution, without using those terms, of course, and say, that it was dangerous to them, or was it something that they just were accustomed to and that was it? It was a fact of life.
It was a fact of life, and this was a place where they were working, and they had to put bread on their tables in those days, just as the same as they do today.
So their main concern was having employment, and
because employment was hard to come by mm-hmm. at that time, and of course Coppercliff was opening up in the early or the late 1800s, and people flocked here.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break now, and when we return, I think what we can do is we'll talk about the early history of the community as you recall it, and we'll continue that theme.
All right.
First, we'll turn the program back to our music host. Welcome back to the interview portion of Memories and Music. Our guest today is Miss Burl Draper. And Miss Draper, I think you began teaching in 1929 during the onset of the Depression in Norman Township?
That's right.
And for those who aren't aware, that's near Cape Riel, isn't it?
Yes, it's in behind the shops at Cape Riel.
Behind the shops at Cape
mm.
Riel.
Cape Riel had moved over there to escape high taxes.
It's happened in many communities.
Yes, it has happened in many cases.
And you taught there for 3 years?
I taught there for 3 years, yes.
What was your salary when you began?
$750 a year.
For the year. And you were thankful to have a job in 29, I'm
oh,
sure.
Oh, very definitely.
You taught elementary school?
Yes, it was a two-room school, and I had the junior grade. And we started with the senior primer, and I went to senior second. I had a group of 58 pupils. Teachers today would not want to teach 58 pupils. They'd rather have 25 or 30.
So you had 58 when you began?
Yes.
Then you moved to Coppercliff
in 32,
and taught at the elementary school?
Yes.
And taught there until you retired?
That's right.
In 1968.
I taught grade 1 in Coppercliff until 1945, and in 45, they let me design part of the kindergarten, and that is when the kindergarten started. And I taught kindergarten until I retired.
Who were some of the principals over the years?
Mr. McPhail was my first principal. I went to school to Mr. McPhail. He was principal down in the school where the dairy is today, and he was also principal in the school up on, I think it's Union Street, where the other school was. It was in behind the general office.
There were two schools?
Yes, there were two schools, a senior and a junior.
Senior and a junior. And which mm-hmm. one did you begin at?
I was in the junior.
And the junior was located?
Down where the dairy is today.
Down where the dairy is today. Mm-hmm. Did you ever teach at the other one?
No.
No.
No, in 1913, you see, the school on School Street was built, and we were ready to move into it. In September of 1913.
September of
1913.
Mm-hmm. Now, your first principal was Mr. McPhail?
That's right.
And who were some of the other principals?
Well, the only other one was Mr. Orr. He came in 45. And then the last 2 years of my teaching, Mr. Orr had passed on. Bob Campbell took over from him, and he was the principal.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the other principals who were here before.
No.
I started school.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the names of the teachers down in that first school that I attended. Maud Boyd was the junior teacher. Miss Sutherland was the intermediate teacher, and Miss Plum was the senior teacher. And later, Miss Plum taught grade 8, or it would be senior 3rd at that time, or senior 4th. Mm-hmm. And Miss Sutherland taught, senior 3rd. And Maud Boyd moved away from Coppercliff about that time.
This school by the dairy, the students from there then transferred over to the central school.
Right.
What was it called?
Coppercliff Public School
mm-hmm. in 1913.
Yes.
And the students from the senior school also
yes.
transferred over.
Yes.
The school by the dairy is no longer standing.
No, it was torn down.
The same with the senior school?
No, the senior school was burned.
Burned.
In 1922, I think it was, or 23.
You were about to mention the school by the dairy was torn down for...
Yes, for the dairy.
For the dairy
yes,
itself.
Yes, the dairy was built there.
Was the dairy built around 1913?
Oh, no.
No,
no, because that school was used by the Finnish people as a church and as a place for meetings.
Not by the Finnish Lutherans, though, as a church?
No, it wasn't the Finnish Lutheran church. It was another...
Presbyterians. I wonder.
It could have been.
I think it might have been
the Finnish Presbyterian.
I believe they were quite active at that time in the community. The school down by the dairy. What was it like? What do you recall about it?
Well, it was a.
You had the fixed cast iron desks, I assume.
Oh, not fixed desks.
They weren't fixed.
I don't think they were. They were double desks. I guess possibly they would have been fixed.
Because I went to a school where there were fixed desks, so I guess I was assuming
they would
there
be
might
fixed.
Have been. Everything was very regimented.
Yes, very, very regimented. And I can remember Mr. McPhail coming at least once or twice a week and observing. He would walk up and down the aisles with his hands behind his back and peek over your shoulder.
And everyone really, really wanted to work then.
The educational system certainly, as you're aware, has changed over the years.
Oh, a great deal.
What have been some of the more dramatic changes that you recall at the elementary level? Now you've been able to, you've observed it as a student and as a teacher.
Yes, well, I think that the change in the type of reading material. When I started to school, there wasn't too much reading material. And now most rooms have their own libraries. And the beginning primers were altogether different.
When I started to school, we started with The Little Red Hen, and it was written.
And then the very next story was printed. Therefore, you had to learn to identify both the printed word and the written word at the very beginning. Nowadays, they don't do that, which I think is much better.
You're suggesting which is better?
The printing is much, much better than teaching them to write and to print at the same time, or to recognize the print at the same time.
Right.
As a teacher, what were some of the major challenges you would encounter? Were there challenges to motivate the students? Was that a major challenge?
I didn't have too much trouble motivating the little people. They all seemed to be so very, very eager to learn.
They're at that eager and keen age,
I think. Oh, very, very eager.
Exciting age.
And I don't know what happens along the way. But I didn't have too much a problem. Oh, you would have problems in discipline, but they were little problems that could be
ironed out along the way.
Yes.
Did you find the parents, when you were teaching back in the 30s, took quite an interest in their youngsters and were concerned and involved?
They weren't involved. They were concerned. I don't think I've ever met a parent yet who wasn't concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But a great many of them were not involved. But you take a woman with a family of six or seven, she can't be involved.
No.
Especially with the living conditions back in the 30s.
Well, you were mentioning earlier that your mother was a tailoress.
Yes.
Yet really was unable to practice that as a business or a vocation when she came to Sudbury because of the time involved.
She did make all our clothes.
Mm-hmm.
She made the boys' trousers and their suits. And the first coat that I had that had been bought was the year I went to Teachers College. At that time it was called Normal School.
Mm-hmm.
And it was bought from Levine's.
From Levine's?
Yeah.
But to reemphasize that point, parents were just, there was just too much work to do.
There was too much work to do, and of course they couldn't be involved with the school too much. Of course, in those days, they didn't expect the parents to be involved.
Mm-hmm.
they wouldn't thank a parent to come and sit all day in your classroom.
No.
In fact, they'd ask you to leave, I think.
Yes, I've heard that often occurred. During the Depression itself, would you encounter teachers being laid off, losing their jobs?
Not so many, because once you got on the staff here, you pretty well stayed. It's not like today. A teacher will go from one school to the other. Of course, right now she wouldn't do that because she wouldn't get a job, not likely.
No, that's right.
But in those days, you didn't change, because there again, you'd be in the same situation. You wouldn't get a job.
Did you happen to prefer that system where you would stay in the school throughout your career?
I liked that system because I enjoyed teaching over here. I enjoyed teaching, period, and I felt that changing wasn't such a good idea. You got established. All your materials were in the one place. The people knew you, and most of them helped you as much as they could. I don't think that change is such a good idea.
The changes would occur when you would encounter these new faces every fall.
That's right. And when you'd lose them in the spring, it would break your heart.
It would be sad.
Yeah. I went to a lot of summer courses, and that's how I got change.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, of course, education in those days is not the same as education today. It wasn't as easy.
As easy in the sense of availability of materials, I assume.
Right. And availability of the schools. You had to travel some distance for schools. If you wanted to take a course in a specific subject, you had to go to Toronto. And one year I went over to Chicago to get a course.
In order to upgrade yourself?
Yes, well, it was the only place I get more work on kindergarten and nursery school, because Ontario or Canada didn't have anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I took a course at Evanston, and it was affiliated with Columbia University. And it was quite an enlightening course.
I would think it would be quite an experience.
It was quite an experience.
Well, I think you're right. Education has changed. And in some ways, I think education then and now can be, it has its rewards, and at times it can be difficult.
Yes.
And it's difficult to compare the two.
It is very difficult. But I was talking about open concept the other day, and open concept is not new. You had open concept when you were in the little red schoolhouse.
Don't you find that many apparent, or so-called innovations are really a reoccurrence of ideas that have appeared along the way in the past?
That's right.
And I think those who read history, I think, are often very attuned to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because ideas are not quite as unique as they seem.
No. I don't think there's a new idea when it comes to education under the sun, except that metric system. I don't know whether that's any good or not.
That's a challenge for Canadians in general. On that note, we'll take our break. We'll turn the program back to Doug McLaughlin. When we return, we'll wrap the program up.
We'll
turn the program over to Doug McLaughlin.
Miss Beryl Draper has been our guest today on Memories and Music, and we've covered a number of topics, really. But just to wrap up the program, your father's name was C.S. Draper. Your mother's name?
Was Sarah Ann Draper.
Sarah Ann Draper,
yes,
and her maiden name?
Sarah Ann Draper. She was Sarah Ann Wood.
Wood. Mm-hmm. She came from?
Parry Sound.
Parry Sound, and your father came from?
Queel.
How do you remember your parents?
Well, Mother was a very, very busy woman. She would help anyone that needed help in the community. There are a great many babies that she delivered when the doctor didn't get there in time. There are a great many women that she taught how to make trousers for their boys and dresses for their girls. She always had time for people. Dad was a very hard-working man. He was on shift work all the time. You work a 12-hour shift in a day, and you are very tired. Therefore, you go to bed early. And I can remember one night my sister and her boyfriend
were sitting out on the veranda, and they were laughing and talking, and Dad hollered down, "Jim." And he said, "Yes, Mr. Draper." And Mr. Draper said, "You can get the morning paper quicker by going downtown." And that was the kind of man Dad was. He was a very strict man. If he liked a person, he would listen to them. And I can remember some of the teachers coming in here, and one of the girls was a staunch conservative. And when she came in, Dad would turn up his hearing aid, put down his paper, and he would be a liberal. Then there was another girl who was a staunch liberal. And when she came in, Dad would be ready for her, and they both would go out just so very, very upset. And Dad would be very happy.
Meanwhile, he'd enjoy himself. Now, your parents came to Coppercliff in 1898 and lived in this house that
That's
we're living
right.
in, that mm-hmm. we're in right now, I should say, in 18 Collins or Poplar Street.
Yes.
You were born in this house.
That's right.
You lived here all your
mm-hmm.
life. When you look back over the years, I assume you have quite a fond attachment to Coppercliff.
Oh, yes. I wouldn't want to live any place else. Coppercliff is a wonderful place. When we had illness in the house, people were right here to help. I can remember when Mother was so very ill, one night I had a big table full of ironing, and Mr. and Mrs. Cleland came in, and he said, "You're not going to do this tonight." And I said, "Oh, yes, I have to have linen for Mother's bed, because I wouldn't put anything on that wasn't ironed." And he said, "I'll be back in a few minutes." And inside of 10 minutes, he was back with a big flat ironer. And he said, "Now, you use this as long as you have to." And you don't get that in very many places.
No, so it was a close-knit community.
Oh, it was like a big family.
And after a while, you'd get to know everyone.
Yes.
And, of course, you've had an opportunity being a teacher.
Yes.
You've come to know so
yes.
many people
mm-hmm.
through the years, I would assume.
So many delightful people.
You'd go downtown and never feel that you're a stranger.
No, there was at one time, it would take you about 3 hours to walk uptown. And going to school in the morning, I always had a trail of youngsters hanging on to my coattail. And those youngsters have come back to see me, which is very, very wonderful.
I'm sure it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it is. When you look back over the number of years that you were in the teaching profession, you have good memories of that.
Oh, very good memories. And good memories about the children in Coppercliff. People judge children, and they shouldn't, because a child will be a child no matter what. But they do grow up.
We try to make them into men and women too quickly.
Very much too quickly. And it's sad, you know, to push a child into some place where he doesn't want to go.
Because they're out exploring, aren't they?
They
you
are,
would find that
yes.
When you were teaching, particularly at that level, that they're really at that exploring discovery age.
Yes. They have to do that, because that's the only way you learn. Even an adult has to try a thing first.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we'll conclude the program on that note of optimism. I always find it refreshing to talk with people who have enjoyed their career, and really, if they had an opportunity to make any changes, wouldn't make any changes.
No, I wouldn't.
I sense that's the way
no.
it is with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ms. Draper, I've certainly enjoyed chatting with you today, and on behalf of the listening audience, I would like to thank you for taking time out to
it
share with us.
It has been a pleasure.
Your memories, and I do know that we'll be having another interview in the future, and we can talk about a little more about early days in Coppercliff.
I'd like that.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Memories and Music on CIGM FM Stereo, brought to you every week at this time by Inco Metals Company Limited. Next week, our special guest will be Bill Ellis. ¶¶